So thank you for bearing with my English. It will be much faster, I promise, but I read better than I speak in French. So if I say something that you need me to clarify, let me know. And like the cat here, please, thank you for bearing with that. So I'm going to break down the topic of, is it friend or foe, American home appliances for ads for American home appliances in France in the 1950s. So I'm going to give a little bit of context with mixed within some advertisements, along with a specific look at advertisements, and then I'll end with some conclusions. So the context is, this is part of a larger book project that I'm working on, and part of the title is in French, Cherchez la femme, and this image actually summarizes one of the key arguments of my book. And as you can see, you have American actress, and I wish my machine were working, but you have Kim Novak in the corner, and you have Brigitte Bardot kind of looking over at the American actress in Cannes in 1956, kind of wondering what is going on with that American woman. And so part of the large argument of my book is that media, especially representations of French and American women, and I'm going to look specifically at advertisements, was a way to negotiate U.S. and French relations after World War II. And in particular, the way in which each woman from each side, the French woman and the American woman, how they became known as symbols for each other's nation. And by looking at each other, they sorted out what each country meant in relation to each other. But what's important is that images, especially in advertising, such as said by John Berger, a British art critic in Ways of Seeing, is that images often are a way to shed and manipulate the present self in order to imagine a certain future. And so when we look at advertisements, it's not just selling a product, it's selling some sort of meaning that you can transform yourself. And it is in the guise of purchasing something, but I'm going to say that it's something more than just buying a machine. It's actually perhaps buying a way of life and buying a certain form of femininity that perhaps is, and it's actually fitting with the last presentation, perhaps a monstrous version of a woman known as the American woman. So I'm going to give you some context and explain what I mean by sort of the monstrous American woman and her machines after World War II. But just to for context, the United States helped France rebuild after the war, and there was lots of debates about the role of the United States in helping France rebuild. So you have, on the one hand, the sort of beautiful image of kind of like very peaceful, but then you have a more leftish approach that it's the tentacles of America that are going to take over France, and in many ways, as I'll talk about shortly, is through American machines. It's through the ideal of the American woman and the machines that she uses that is a colonization of France. So like this sort of octopus with dollar signs, yes, there were dollar signs involved, but it was in the guise of a better modern life. And just to put the numbers in context with the Marshall Plan, supported by the US government, is that France was second in terms of receiving funds from the US government and a variety of corporations, but mainly the US government, after the United Kingdom. And so this context is important because in terms of injecting the American machine into the French context, it was very much a way in which for the American government to ensure its foothold in Europe, but also kind of recreating the world in perhaps an American mold. So there are a couple of books that are very important that help contextualize this. Two of them are important. And some of you coming from the north of France may be intrigued by Remaking France. And so what was happening after the war is that there were these trains that would travel all over and they would have these installations that was run by the US government. And one in particular was in Lille, where they had different washing machines and various gadgets. And they said, well, this is the way the Americans live and this is the way that France should rebuild itself. So one argument that Brian McKenzie makes in Remaking France is that these American exhibits all over France was, one, a way to help France rebuild, but again, it was in a way of making France rebuild in an American model. And so the machine, the American machine, was one way to rebuild France. Another good book, written by Kristen Ross, Fast Cars and Clean Bodies, particularly looks at the colonization of French life inside of France, but then you have a decolonization as the French Empire is crumbling outside of the hexagon. And so what is happening is, as she argues, is there's a bombardment of the American way of life through its various products and the various machines that are there. And so there were concerns about technological change. This wasn't new in France. It's not saying it's something right after World War II. But the power imbalance, where the United States had such, like the tentacles that you saw, there was nobody else around to really provide that support. And so the machine that came from America really played a central role in that process. And so these are some ads, and I'll talk more. But you know, the way to invest and to make France rebuild, there were collaborations between several major American companies such as Ford, Kelvinator, which just started in Michigan, and you have General Electric. These large American companies that were making machines were like, well, we can reinvigorate your economy by having you work in our factories. We can set up shop and we will help you. We will, make everything great for France if you start building these machines and perhaps taking on a more mechanized American style of life. And so beyond advertisements, which I will talk about in a minute, this was seen, this is actually Look magazine in the United States, where they focus on the way in which American companies such as General Motors, they were setting up these companies, and it was helping the French woman. So I'm always kind of looking at the gendered component. But by the French woman coming and taking on the role of almost like Rosie the Riveter in the United States, but this is post World War II, where she's making refrigerators, this allowed her to have a new life, a more modern life. And so the results of this is this is sort of propping up American nationalism after the war. But the machine itself, as a source of production and a way of reinvesting in France, played a very central role. But as we, as I'll talk about and show in a little bit, there was a lot of anxiety about the American machine as idealized in the American woman. Another very good book that recently came out in 2015 by Nicole Rudolph looks specifically at the post-war French home. And in particular, there's a chapter about the Salon des Arts Ménagères, where there was, and I'll show you these posters. Some of you may have seen these before, but so there were these, annual meetings of having various gadgets and machines. And it's not just after World War II. They started in 1923 and ending in 1983, but it's often seen as the height of this in 1955, when there were 1.4 million visitors. But if you actually look, if we look at even the posters from the 1930s, it's creating a certain ideal of the French woman as being a sort of robotic, mechanized person who can have control over her home. And it's even more explicit as we look at some of these posters after the war. And so what's interesting to me, if you're looking at one of the posters, 1948, it's very similar to the Statue of Liberty, the one on the left, sort of like having the sense of freedom by becoming a sort of robotic housewife. And that, the Stepford Wives didn't come out yet, but this is very much sort of, there's some sort of freedom, and because it's an art, right, it's more innocuous. It's an art of being a machine and efficient in your home. Or perhaps it's like playing a fiddle. You can completely, control your home, or in this case, let's just disassemble the woman into her various parts. And by the 1960s, after the sort of crescendo, you see, the woman still is a mechanized source of, she becomes a machine through these products. And what I'm going to say is that the advertisements for a lot of these American products were trying to set that ideal. Again, this is being something coming from the Ministry of Education. There was a lot of collaboration between the American government and the French government to establish this sort of modernity, this mechanized modernity, as the place that the way that France should move. But this reminds me a lot of what was happening in the 1920s in the United States. I don't know if any of you have heard of the Little Woman GPA, not a grade point average, which many of my students really worry about. But there was a series of ads by NWA and Sun, which is often considered the one of the first and one of the most long-standing advertising agencies in the U.S. And it was called the General Purchasing Agents. So one thing, it was about the citizen consumer, you know, the targeting the American woman and also the French woman after the war in order to rebuild France in the name of the nation. And so a lot of these images that we're just seeing are very much like, so this is actually an ad for an ad. This is, you know, an ad agency advertising to other companies to try to sell their products. And you can see it's sort of the woman is the master of her home, where you have, she is the master of food, shelter, clothing, and a variety of other things. And so the woman becomes a machine of the home using machines in the home. And this very much gets taken up in where I've done a lot of my research looking at French magazines such as Elle. And from the get-go, Elle every year, in addition to showing the fashions, you know, showcasing the variety of those machines that were used by women and showing how fashionable they were. And as you start reading and looking, a lot of these products are American, one, because that's where things are being produced, but then they would eventually focus on, well, this is an American mark or American brand that is now made in Paris. So there's sort of a sense of pride of that being reestablished. So machines became fashionable for young French women because this magazine was mainly geared toward the young modern woman. And many American appliances and gadgets were seen as a mode of fashion and as a mark of modernity. And so in many ways, what you're seeing is this continuation of this general purchasing agent, or GPA, in a French context. And so we're going to look at some ads a little bit later. But there are a variety of articles that really focus on the worries among French women about the ideal of the mechanized American woman and the machines that she's using. Not only the machines coming from America, but sort of the equating of the American machines with the American woman. And so there are a variety, it's very hard for you to see in the back, but this is sort of a list of all of the things. It says, you know, I married an American eight months ago. And this is immediately after the war, and it's a French woman writing about marrying an American man and what she observed. And many of the observations were how robotic the American woman was, how the French woman was more natural. So some examples might be, if I look, you know, the French woman cares about her handwriting, whereas the American woman would just use a machine. So there's this assumption that there's sort of a naturalness, sort of a, you know, a humanness to writing by hand versus the machine. And it even goes down to everything, you know, the French woman knows how to perfectly drink her wine, whereas the American woman crassly drinks, like a robot, the whiskey that her husband also drinks. But early on in the 1950s, and I've written about this elsewhere, but there was a large debate in Paris Match, but who is better off, and actually this isn't just Paris Match, it's elsewhere, but you can see, I mean, this is like hitting it on the head. And you know, it's the American woman, is she the worst or the most unhappy in the world? And so what happened was Raymond Cartier, who was a famous French journalist who was always writing, he lived in the United States for quite a while, and he was saying how she wasn't happy because she was mechanized and she was constantly tied to her machines. But then we have, a month later, an American woman who lives in Paris by the name of Margaret Gardner says, you've got it all wrong. The French woman is actually the most unhappy because she doesn't have these machines. She's constantly having to trick her husband to get what she wants, whereas the American woman is in control, and even though she perhaps is, you know, tied to her machines, in the end, she's much happier. So in the end, after this, a month later, the editors culled through all of the letters coming in from the French woman, and they ultimately concluded that the French woman was the happiest. And this is where the machine comes in. There's actually the language of the machine and how and why the French woman is happier. So pardon again my reading this in French, but I have it here to make sure you understand what I'm saying. But this is one of the most striking passages, one of the most striking letters that come. So, Madame Isabelle Blanchard de Grenoble souhaite que les Américaines de ne jamais connaître des années telles qu'ont vécu les Françaises pendant l'occupation. And the quote, car si en Amérique, ce sont les maris qui font tout, aidés par des machines électriques, je me demande, dit-elle, ce que feraient les Américaines avec une demi-heure d'électricité par jour dans les bonnes périodes et les maris absents. Il se leur resterait probablement plus que ça faire sauter la cervelle. So essentially, the French woman's life is more natural. The American is a sort of machine, and it's to the point where if she doesn't have her machine, she's basically going to blow her brains out, right? And so in the end, you know, the mechanized American woman is critiqued. And this isn't the only place, and I'm going to show you a couple of others. This is a little after the 1950s. This is coming in the United States into the Saturday Evening Post, and they're doing a comparison direct between the women of America and of France. And I'd like to read how they set up the piece. Today, the French woman's image of her American sister is of a cool, efficient creature whose push-button gadgetry allows her to spend her entire time popping in and out of department stores and supermarkets. The American woman's image of her French counterpart is of a frivolous creature whose sexual propensities and Dior clothes allow her to spend her entire time popping in and out of love affairs. Each is convinced the other is unconsciously spoiled, both by her men and by society in general. Each is convinced the other has it made. And then it goes on, which has it better? And in the end, this American woman who lived quite a bit in France said the French woman had it better because she has a more natural life as compared to the sort of robotic American woman. This also appears in another, going back to France, because I'm constantly looking on both sides, from Marie Claire, following Martha, who was a young college woman who commuted every day, and the way in which this article described it in painstaking detail, it sounded like a very tiring commute between New Jersey and New York City. But what was most fascinating, and is important in another passage, is the focus on the machines in the American woman's life, in particular, the kitchen. So I'll read another passage. La vraie pièce de séjour est la cuisine. Une cuisine à faire rêver la française la plus aisée. Les murs sont littéralement tapisés avec des éléments en bois. Il y a un four électrique qui siffle quand le rôti brûle dans le four. Un ouvre-boîte électrique qui, grâce à un système aimanté, sans perdre des conserves, et en un clin d'œil, les ouvre, les vide dans un ustensile approprié. Un toaster capable de griller plusieurs tartines à la fois. Un appareil semblable à ceux que l'on voit en France dans les bureaux des présidents directeurs généraux des grandes sociétés destinées à appeler les enfants pour le breakfast et le dîner. Près de l'immense réfrigérateur accroché dans un coin de mur libre, il y a un calendrier réclame offert par l'entreprise locale de pompe funèbre, toujours à votre service, et le slogan qui s'attale au-dessus d'un paysage de camping. So in this particular article, it's saying, you know, and this is just a description of the kitchen and sort of a tongue-in-cheek sort of, you know, the funeral home is sort of this always at your service. And in some ways, there's a critique of her sort of mechanized life and sort of the treachery that she goes through. And yet at the same time, there is, you know, there's a sense of liberation that the American woman had that the French woman didn't have. But in the end, it's looking at the machine and how that perhaps could be a form of liberation, but in the end, it's sort of a strange, perhaps sardonic way of approaching that. And just reading this reminded me, and this might have reminded you, of one of the most, for me, one of the most famous scenes from Monocle, from Jacques Tati. And I'll just show you briefly this particular scene. And so, again, this is part of a larger context where France is redeveloping, and in one of the most magical things about this film is the constant layers between the modern and the old world, and the way in which that sort of modern world with the machines is mechanical, almost like Madame Arpel is kind of like a little bird moving along the sidewalk. So this actually reminds me very much of this article that we they're describing what they saw. So let's take a look. So this very much reminds me of the critique that Tati had about, you know, the mechanized life of modern France. And although it's not a French woman doing this, it's very much in part of the context. So now I'm going back to finally to advertisements, and part of I showed some advertisements, but I just want to give you a flavor of that, and for sake of time, I don't want to eat up too much more. But in terms of advertisements, one thing that is helpful for us to look at these advertisements is to remind ourselves of some of the core definitions and sort of the meanings and the place of advertising in our everyday lives. So again, French magazines in the 1950s were trying to recreate some sort of new life for France, especially for French women. And what I would say is that through these ads is trying to sell the American woman machine ideal, sort of this mechanized life as an ideal and through the American products that were being sold. So one particular definition is that advertising, and although this is not in France, but I always love this guy hiding inside of a Coca-Cola machine. But it's a way to, you know, and one definition is that it just stops you in the moment. And it basically, and this is where we will critique, is that it's a mutually advantageous exchange. That's definitely coming from the advertising industry. But many ads, such as these, for things like Frigidaire and the Calvinator, you know, it's like a thunder coming through. This is something that you need to pay attention to. And in terms of the language that is involved, it's almost a woman is shocked out of her life, perhaps. At least that's the way I'm reading it. And then the cloud or the sun is somewhat unhappy. But as you're reading this, you know, the problems of everyday life that were happening before the war and during the war could be solved by, you know, having an efficient space. And so what you're seeing is that there's a lot of the same language when you start looking at ads that were made in the US getting translated over into France. Another key definition coming from Raymond Williams is that advertising is the official art of capitalist society. So not only is it, you know, trying to sell certain products, but it's selling various ideologies. And what I would argue is that it was trying to create a world of machines in some ways for women. And you see this through the variety of ways, and you don't actually see women in any of this, but these are marketed and geared toward women. But it's creating a whole world, not only of the world of the machines themselves, but it's creating a world that is mechanized and is inhabited by machines. And then going back to, you know, reinforcing a world of, it's the art of capitalist society, is here sort of the abundance coming from the industrialized world, and that would make life much better. And lastly, advertising is certainly a mechanism to create security and definitely insecurity. And often machines are seen as a sort of holy grail for a modern life, especially after this time period. But one thing you may want to look at when you look very closely is what are the expressions on these women's faces? And what are the gender dynamics going on? And so Hoover, which, you know, starting in the US, but then definitely, you know, getting hold in Europe, you know, it makes life so much easier. And what it makes life easy for is often in the service of her male counterpart. So the machine facilitates a gender dynamic that props up the man's place in terms of the woman after the war. And although this particular ad is not an American product, it's still emblematic of the time. So it said, pour elle, on moulinex, and then pour lui, des bons plats, dont bon petit plat. And if you look at the woman's face, she's smiling, but for me, she's kind of looking off in the corner dejectedly a bit, perhaps, you know, although life could perhaps be happy with all of these various food processors, but is it really happy? What is really going on in her head? So to conclude, and I'm trying to stay within my 20-minute window, I went over a little, that American machines, at least one argument that I have is that, and then American women as machines symbolize the colonization of French life and the French woman after the war. And the various ads, and I gave you a small sampling, I have many, many more, was a way to massage a mechanized life and to remake the French woman as an ideal machine and perhaps in the same mold as the American woman. So I'm going to stop myself there in the sake of time. So thank you again to deal with my English, and then maybe like her, we're all happy that we have coffee soon. Okay.